Vous écoutez l'autre monde, and we are with the great, the famous band, if I can say. So, Ye Banished Privateers, hi, nice to meet you.
Hello, very nice to be here. I'm Björn Bellows Malmros from Ye Banished Privateers. I'm the accordion player and one of the founding members of the band.
So we are here to talk about your last album, Till the Sea Shall Give Up Her Dead, released in April on Napalm Records. For this album, Between Legend and Reality, your album explores legendary maritime tales and historical truths, notably with the track like The Cranker or A Final Toast of Oliver Cromwell. What personal research or inspiration lies behind the writing of these shanties?
Well, like we do a ton of research for most of our songs, really, even if it's about legends and myths, or if it's about actual historical facts. So normally when we write a song, like you get this idea of a story you want to tell, and then you deep dive into sources on the internet. And I personally can sit for several days, or usually it's nights before I go to bed, and I sit and I find facts and I make notes, and I try to compile this. That's the biggest challenge, is to cook everything down to the format of a song, which is almost like a piece of poetry or something, where it needs to be very dense, very direct, because you don't have all this time to tell the story of a song, so you have to leave a lot of it out and just make small hints and everything. But yeah, just like with our previous albums, there's been a lot of research for this one.
About the album theme, it seems to explore in depth the lives of the 18th century sailors between tragedy, camaraderie, fleeting joys. May you tell us which historical events or stories most influenced your creative process?
The whole theme of this band is 18th or 17th century piracy, and not just piracy, but maritime history, and for people somehow connected to the sea who was living during that era. We've previously done albums on different aspects of those themes. Like we started out, when we first started as a band, it wasn't as focused. It was more about, yeah, being pirates in general. And then we started finding our form during our second album, with more about these stories about life at sea. And on third, we landed on coming back to port and making plans for the future. And the fourth album was about the end of the golden age of piracy. And this is sort of the next era, where the golden age of piracy is more or less over, and those sailors that were either privateers or pirates, or just sailing the navy, trying to figure out like where to go next, and just making a living from day to day. And it's a very, very harsh life, and a very dangerous way of living as well. Like most sailors didn't get to live up to an old age, so we knew that there had to be like both this acceptance, where you have to face this grim reality that you would have to do this for a living, but that's in human nature. It's also part of being able to laugh about your circumstances, like this gallows humor. And in general, we tend to find that the harsher life is, the more exuberance your parties becomes, and your sense of humor and everything. So yeah, that's the inspiration for this album. Is we figured that when we started writing these songs, and we realized that we had two types of songs. We had really joyful drinking songs, and we had songs that were most revolving around tragedy and loss at sea. We saw this common theme about how people in general deal with dangers and loss, and the prospect of not living up to an old age.
To talk about the music and all the instruments, there is so many members in the band. How do you choose the timbre and the texture to create the atmosphere of the 18th century and bring your stories to life? Is there a writing journey or?
Yeah, it depends from song to song. For this album, we had a couple of like rehearsal sessions where we tried out new material, and and different members got to present their ideas, and we started rehearsing together. And but a lot of focus is, of course, on the story. It's very important that people in the band understand the story of the song and the message of the song before we start playing it, so that they know in which direction they should take it. But otherwise, as a process, we don't play by musical notes, and we don't have fixed arrangements. It's more like, okay, so this would be the melody, this for the verse, and this would be the melody for the chorus, and then everyone just brings what they think suits best to the table. They interpret it the way they want.
It's more a feeling creation.
Yes, definitely. In very few songs, I think maybe we have one or two that has been like complete arrangement from the start. So in 98% of the time, it's more like, okay, so this is the idea, this is the main theme, let's play it together and evolve it. So yeah, and we create it together.
And about the folklore to modernity, maritime folklore occupies an important place in your musical universe. How do you reinvent these ancient traditions and myths to make them accessible and impactful for today's audience?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure we have to. I mean, it's like folklore and traditions. It's a very popular theme in today's society as well, because people are, of course, as always, searching for their own identity in our society today. And some people go to like, okay, I'm really into pagan music, or some people say I'm really into the Viking culture, and these last couple of years, for the last decade, it's been a really strong emergence of this maritime history thing, and especially revolving around pirates. And I think it was probably Alestorm that made it popular, and we were running slightly behind, which was like a different side of this coin. Alestorm being more party pirates, and we were being more like authentic sea shanty style. And I think together, these two bands, we paved the way for a whole genre, because now there is so many bands in this genre. Which means, so to answer the question, I'm not sure we need to make it accessible for people, because they are already looking for it, I think.
To talk about the track A Final Toast for Oliver Cromwell. In this one, there is some dark humor blends with historical criticism. What message were you trying to convey by evoking such a controversial figure? And how do you perceive the role of art as a means of subversion?
Well, art, like, if I should start by answering the last part of the question, it's art is super important. It's very important for subversive action, because that's one of the still areas of society that is still free, even though it's being threatened. Artists are allowed to express themselves in different ways, but in general, a lot of people also don't like that. Like when we show people that we actually have political messages in our songs, or when we make statements, we always get the reaction, "Oh, please, I'm just here to enjoy the music. I don't need the lectures. I don't need the politics." But I think every artist has a message. Like if it's supposed to be worth something, it has to mean something. And then you, as a listener, or you as a consumer of that art, you can choose whether or not you want to care about the message or not. It's totally fine to just enjoy the music, but you should know that there is, of course, a message behind it. Not just our music, but almost every artist does this, I think. Okay, so what was the first part of the question again?
What message were you trying to convey by evoking the figure of Oliver Cromwell, which is a controversial figure?
Yes. Well, I mean, Oliver Cromwell is celebrated as a great statesman, and in many parts of the world, seen almost like a hero or this historical father figure. But if you go to Scotland or Ireland, they have a completely different view of him, and that's of course because it's in war, it's the winners who are allowed to write the history, and the alternative side of that history is usually forgotten or buried. But we also found that the story about Oliver Cromwell is very dark itself. It has a large portion of dark humor, where, because I believe it was King George II who had him excavated, it, like his body was dug up after his death, and he was put to trial for treason and executed again after his death, in a very gruesome execution where they chopped off his head and they had his body torn to pieces by horses, and then they paraded his body parts around in England. Just that type of excessive violence to a dead body was something that we found morbidly comedic and called for a song, really.
During the recording process, were there any unexpected moments or special experiences, I mean technical or human, that marked the creation of the songs and maybe helped to shape the soul of this album?
It's always that part where, like, when we record, we usually try to record as I don't know what word to use, but authentic or natural as possible. We try to get as many instruments in at the same time. We don't really use click tracks or anything. We want to record like a session, but with that many instruments, it's not quite possible. So we also do some add-ons and overdubs and stuff like that. And especially one of the biggest challenges is always isolation of sound. So that's to make it easier to post-process it and work with it, we need as much separation as possible between the different sounds. So that's a limiting factor where we had to put musicians in closets and put up big screens and put a choir in the kitchen and the lead vocalists in the wardrobe over here and everything. But then me as a producer of the album, then it's always very exciting to go through all these recordings, like to listen to each instrument when it's soloed out, because you can discover all these gems of, oh wow, Ava played this here on the violin. That's beautiful. Okay, we need to put this in the forefront. So it's more of those things that can really shape the sound of a song, where you catch the little details and you bring those details to the forefront, and then you bring that instrument back and you let someone else pop into the foreground. Maybe Jens does a really nice thing on the banjo, and that can almost shape a whole song. Like you can find your grooves there. But otherwise, I think, especially when it comes to Peter, who does lead vocals on songs in Blackbeard, I really like when we record, we always push him to the limit, because Peter is at his best when he's almost breaking down. Like, so we make him sing the same song over and over and over again, so that he gets almost desperate and more frantic, and his voice can hardly carry him. That's always the best take.
May you tell us a word about the track The Pranker, which is also a video clip about the figure that you used inside The Curse of the Red Fiddler and
So the Cranker, we write our own music, but this is sort of a tribute to a Swedish traditional song called the Hårgalåten. If you listen to the two songs, you can hear it's completely different songs. You wouldn't be able to spot similarities, but they are quite similar in their character in a way. And Hårgalåten, this Swedish traditional song, is a song about people in Sweden dancing to a party, and a fiddler comes to this party and joins them. Everyone starts dancing to his tunes, and they can't stop dancing. Everyone's just enchanted by this dance, and they keep on dancing. And one of the people in the crowd says that, you know, can't you see it's the devil who's playing? What are you doing? Wake up. But no one listens to him, and they keep dancing and dancing until he dances away with their souls, and he steals their souls and takes their lives. So Hampus, who wrote the lyrics for this song, wanted to do this as a tribute or a reference to this song and put it on a ship instead. And then I just started playing the hurdy-gurdy, so we switched the fiddler for a hurdy-gurdy instead. And yeah, so it's basically our interpretation of a Swedish traditional song.
And for the video clip, how did you get the idea and what was the process between the idea and what we see?
When you make a music video, it's always the choice between, like, you have to look at what's our budget, what's our timeline, what is technically possible to do. We wanted from the start, we were really keen on doing this video because the story is so captivating, and we wanted to do it on a large full-scale ship. We want to shoot scenes underwater and everything. But in the end, as an independent band, we need to figure out other creative ideas. And I think that's what we do best in our band. I mean, our 20 to 30 band members, we have everyone help out and pitch in. So we came up with this idea that it's a crew that has been shipwrecked and they're crawling up in the ocean. And in order to keep their moods up, they make a camp. And one of the sailors tells the story, like, of how they could actually be worse off, you know. Things could be worse. Okay, we're shipwrecked, but at least we're here. We have a warm fire and everything. But I'm going to tell you the story about when the devil boarded a ship a different time. And then in the end of the video, of course, the devil shows up on the beach as well with his hurdy-gurdy. So you know that they're probably fucked, these guys as well. So inspiration-wise, it just comes from the song itself and a lot of ideas around it, how to make it actually possible for a small independent band to record this video. We had great help of a guy named John Solomon, who did independent film in our hometown many years ago, and now he does cat videos on YouTube. And he was very keen on experimenting. He's a good match for us because he's very creative in what he can do with small means, and he's always happy to, even though he might have the outset that I don't know how to do this, but I can definitely learn how to do this, and I would like to experiment with this. So he did all the animations, and we had motion captures with real dancers. So the dances that the sailors dance in the video are actually real Swedish folk dance as well.
A word about the track Chained Below. This track addresses the horror of the transatlantic slave trade. How do you reconcile the evocation of these traumas with the celebratory aspect of sea chores?
That's always difficult. We've been wanting to do a song about this for a long time, but we also know that we have to tread lightly because we, as Caucasian people living in the northern part of Sweden, we were not victims in this. We aren't the ones who really own this piece of history. And in modern day society, that's a sensitive topic with cultural appropriation and everything. But since we are in the pirate genre, we have been also dodging this question for a long time because pirates, even though pirate ships often had a form of democracy and where it didn't really matter if you were what color your skin was, because as long as you were contributing on the ship, you had a vote on the ship and you had an equal say. But there was still racism also, definitely a lot of racism during the 18th century and with the slavery going on, but also on pirate ships. Pirates weren't saints. So we decided we wanted to do this story. So this is really, like you say, a story about the transatlantic slave trade, where slaves and whole families were shipped from Africa over to the Americas, and how they were considered not even human, like cargo that could be thrown overboard if needed. So we tried to, like I said, tread lightly, but and do it respectfully, but we really want to do it.
And for the last track, Sailmaker Songs, you evoke Fielder's Green, a sailor's paradise, and Tiernanog, a Celtic mythology. How do these beliefs influence your vision of death at sea and some kind of balance between romanticism and brutal reality?
Like, the reality aspect of it is something we portray in this song a lot, because when you listen to the lyrics, and it's a song about the ceremony of burial at sea. So I think there are three sailors who passes away during this song. It's three different names, and the rituals around it. I mean, on every ship, the ritual was different. We tried to pick from different historical sources on what you could do. But one of the common things was that the sailmaker was the one who was responsible for taking the hammock of the sailor and use that as a body bag, where you st stitched around the body before you sent it overboard. So that was one of the songs that a lot of research went into. Like, I probably researched this one for a week to find out as much as I could about this different ceremonies of burial at sea. And then when it comes to the more spiritual or mythological aspects of it, or religious, the sailors were very superstitious. And most of the people at that time were also religious. And today, you might say it's blasphemy. Like, if you're a good Christian and you start involving Celtic mythology in where you're supposed to end up after you're dead. At that time, people were a lot of times more pragmatic. Like, of course, everyone wants to go to heaven. But if there is no heaven, Tiernanog is fine with me, or Fiddler's Green, as long as it's some place where you're not just gone or not existing forever, or as long as you're not going to hell. So sailors were usually, like, both doing the superstitious things, like always putting the right foot first when you enter the ship, or throwing salt over your shoulder, or not killing albatrosses, but also very religious. So that went hand in hand. So I think in this prayer, they're invoking both parts of Christian religion, but also, like you say, Celtic mythology and superstition.
I give you the opportunity to be the owner of one of the five stuff that I show you. So you can choose a compass that always guides you to hope, a lantern that enlightens hidden truths, a tree with the fruits who can heal the wound, an instrument which melody can calm down all conflicts, or a book on which page is a forgotten secret. Which one would you pick?
I was going to pick the compass because I think we always need hope in life. But I'm gonna go with the harp
Okay.
because you said it was something that can induce peace over conflicts, and I think that's something we need today in this world because we live in what I find to be very dark times at the moment, where people are dying and children are dying at the hands of our world leaders. We have starvation, we have war, and we need more of this harp in the world today. We need to listen to the sound of peace, actually.
Will you come in France soon?
Yes, I believe we have at least one stop in France, but we are going on tour with the Faun this autumn.
Okay.
And I think we are coming to Paris, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know the tour plan by heart. So we're very much looking forward to it because our shows in France have been amazing so far. And we really want to play there more. And I also want to take the opportunity to thank you for inviting me for this interview and for giving us a chance to be more present in French culture and gain more exposure there. And to our French fans, I really hope to see you on our shows in France. And thank you so much for listening to our music.
So thank you so much for the interview and hope to see you soon in France.
Yes, likewise, Sevilla.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Bye.